l-akoma din il-laqa tal-Kumitat tal-Affarijiet Barranin Ewropej, illum għandna laqa li hija 12-il waħdu li fiha se jkun laqa mal-mibgħut speċjali mill-Azerbajġan li His Excellency Mr. Elchin Amirbayov. So first of all, I would like to welcome you. I know you had already some good meetings on government level, also on a parliamentary level with our speaker. We welcome you to the committee, and we would like you to make your introductory remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, thank you for your welcome and for this opportunity to address the members of the Foreign Relations Committee. As I mentioned in my previous meetings, the main purpose of this visit to your beautiful country, which I have discovered for the first time, was twofold. First, it's the message from our president, Ilham Aliyev, to transmit to our counterparts here in Malta his desire to further deepen and develop our bilateral relationship. As you know, Malta and Azerbaijan have been successfully cooperating in a number of fields since Azerbaijan restored its independence in 1991. And we have traditional fields of cooperation like energy, but also we are ready to expand this to other fields for the benefit of our peoples and countries. Of course, we also appreciate relations with Malta being one of the members of the European Union, and the European Union and Azerbaijan are strategic partners in a number of fields, including energy security and also connectivity. As you know, Azerbaijan has been a reliable partner for the European Union in contributing to its energy security for a number of years. And this cooperation has been upgraded even further when last year President of the European Commission, Madame von der Leyen, visited Baku and signed with President Aliyev the Memorandum on Strategic Cooperation, which aims at increasing the volumes of natural gas to be delivered by Azerbaijan to European markets in the context of the ongoing developments in the region. Also, European Union is important to Azerbaijan because it is playing now one of the roles of main facilitators in trying to help us normalize relations with neighboring Armenia. As you know, for almost three decades, the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan was actually an important issue of international agenda. Up until 2020, almost one-fifth of our internationally recognized territory was under illegal foreign occupation. And since 2020, after the 44-day war, Azerbaijan proposed to Armenia to turn the page of hostility and to start elaboration of a peace treaty, which would basically open a new chapter in our relations and which would improve stability and security in the region of South Caucasus. And, of course, the European Union was one of the major facilitators in the person of President of the European Council, Mr. Charles Michel, who on many occasions, several occasions, four or five occasions, has invited Prime Minister Pashinyan of Armenia and President Ilham Aliyev of Azerbaijan to Brussels so that they could engage in negotiations and discuss all the outstanding issues, which would allow us to finalize the peace. So the idea was also to come and to brief our partners and friends in the executive branch, but also in the legislative branch in Malta about the current developments, about Azerbaijan's perspective of how we see the challenges, how we see to resolve them. And since Malta is also currently holding a seat of a non-permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, it was also important for us that Malta gets information also from Azerbaijani side, so that its position as expressed in different international fora could be impartial and could contribute to the spirit of this search for peace. So that is basically the major reasons why I was instructed by President as his representative on special assignments to travel to Malta. And I should tell you that yesterday and today I had very productive and very constructive exchanges of views. I met with Foreign Minister, Mr. Borg, and also met with your President, and also I met before you with the Speaker of your Parliament. So I think that these meetings, they have allowed for me to understand that Malta is very much supportive of the peace efforts between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and Malta as a country which is paying a lot of attention to the international peace and security is ready to support the efforts of the European Union in its facilitation of the questions which are still to be resolved between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Of course, during my discussions, I also touched upon the current main issues on the ground. This is about humanitarian access to the Armenian population of the Karabakh region of Azerbaijan. As you know, we have been trying for quite a lot of time now to make sure that this humanitarian access is ensured from all possible routes without any discrimination. And all our major stakeholders, United States, Russian Federation, European Union, ICRC, which is the only international organization present in Karabakh region, they all are aware about Azerbaijan's strong desire to find a compromise solution so that as soon as possible, humanitarian goods could be channeled to the population of Armenian origin in the Karabakh region of Azerbaijan. Up until now, we did not receive any positive reply from the Armenian population in Karabakh. Basically, we're not talking about the whole population. I think we're talking about the very unconstructive position of the leadership of this separatist entity, which is holding its own population kind of hostage because they are politicizing the issue of humanitarian access. They are trying to explain that one road is better than the other. But, you know, if the people are serious about humanitarian issues and hunger and the kind of the problem with getting the right medicines and other essential staples to people, they cannot actually put any preconditions on the roads of delivery. What's important is that all roads should be involved. So that's why we have made it clear that if Armenians in Karabakh want the delivery of humanitarian assistance to be carried out without any discrimination, we are ready to do it immediately. Another good news which I can share with you is that this morning the Russian Red Cross managed to convince the Armenians of Karabakh to receive their own truck full of humanitarian assistance through one of these two roads, which is the Agdam Road. And this morning I received this news that the truck has entered Khankendi, the town in the Karabakh region, and actually it's now distributed among the local population. So Armenians of Karabakh, they gave their green light to Russian Red Cross. It was initiative of Russian Red Cross, which was supported, of course, by our National Red Crescent Society. And now the first deliveries of humanitarian assistance is being distributed, you know, to local population. We do hope that after this important breakthrough, Armenians of Karabakh will stop politicizing further the issue and they will allow ICRC, the International Committee of Red Cross, to bring in their humanitarian assistance. Both trucks from Lachin and from Agdam are currently ready. They are on standby position. The only thing which we lack is the green light from the Armenians in Karabakh. So hopefully as we speak, consultations are continuing and they would demonstrate wisdom and they would allow ordinary people to receive what they need without further politicizing the issue. And why it is important, Mr. Chairman, is because if we are able to diffuse the tension around humanitarian situation, it would allow both Armenia and Azerbaijan to go back to the peaceful track, the main track. And let me just inform you about what is it all about. So we have negotiations on the draft of the peace agreement, which was proposed by Azerbaijan to Armenia a year ago, and which is negotiated by two teams from each side, led by foreign ministers of Armenia and Azerbaijan. I'm part of this negotiation team from Azerbaijani side, and I can tell you that in the last several months, we have managed to make progress and to agree almost half of the text, which is an important development. So we want to get back to the peace negotiation process so that we can intensify our contacts and negotiations in the weeks and months to come, so that we finalize the text, hopefully by the end of the year. Besides this main track on the peace agreement, we have also two other subsequent tracks. One is on the delimitation of border between Armenia and Azerbaijan, because in the Soviet Union time there was no border as such. These were, as you know, two constituent Soviet socialist republics, so there was an administrative border between them, which is quite long. It's more than 1,000 kilometers. And even in the Soviet Union time, more than 100 kilometers of that border was not delimited. So we need to have two delegations. We already set up these delegations. They are led by deputy prime ministers of Armenia and Azerbaijan, respectively. They held several meetings, so they need to continue this job. And the third track is the work on reopening of transportation links. Because of the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and because of the continued occupation of Azerbaijani regions, not only former Nagorno-Karabakh, but also seven other regions around it, all the railroads, all the highways, they have been destroyed or blocked. So in order to engage Armenia and Azerbaijan in regional cooperation, as part of the normalization effort, we want this third track to continue its work. So as you see, there is a very solid agenda in the peace process. All these three tracks are supported by the United States, by Russia, and by the European Union. And we regret that the almost more than 1 month has been lost about this humanitarian access issue, because Armenia, instead of helping us find a kind of compromise with Armenians in Karabakh, Armenia has orchestrated a large-scale, aggressive anti-Azerbaijani campaign in mass media in Europe, in the United States, elsewhere, using their political lobbies and other friends. And we have lost this time. So I hope that after this important breakthrough that we have this morning, when the first Russian Red Cross truck reached the target population, we will be able to diffuse the tension in the humanitarian field and get back to business. So having informed you about this, our request from all our friendly countries and partners is to remain in touch with Azerbaijan, and we are ready to keep channels of communication open so that you are aware about Azerbaijani view. And actually we look forward to continued contacts in the weeks to come at different levels. And I'm glad that the Speaker of your Parliament also suggested that he is in favor of continuing this contacts with his colleagues from our Parliament. And he mentioned that there is this parliamentary event in Dublin, in Ireland, within the framework of the Council of Europe, I think. So we're happy that our Maltese friends are supporting this peace agenda of Azerbaijan, and I look forward to a fruitful exchange of views with you and members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency. I welcome the good news you shared us this morning, especially about the humanitarian aid reaching people who are in need of that humanitarian aid. And I wish that the corridors, the roads which are open for humanitarian assistance and humanitarian aid are kept open, so that whoever needs assistance, whoever needs humanitarian aid, will get it. I welcome the news of the peace agreement negotiations, and that you have already both sides agreed for more than half of the draft of almost half of the agreement, which you mentioned. And we believe that that is very important, obviously, as a part members of the European Union, and welcome the continuation of this agreement, and encourage to continue to engage in discussion. Unfortunately, because of the war in Ukraine, the Nagorno-Karabakh region has been in the eyes of the world, has taken second place, because we haven't heard so much about this, what is going on, especially in the news. We have to rely on the news, if not for such meetings, to be briefed on what is going on at the moment in that region, which we always say that Malta is a bridge builder for peace. Therefore, we are open to assist in any way we can for both countries to reach a peaceful agreement. And I agree with my speaker, and I'm sure that also the minister has expressed his support for such an agreement, and that we can assist in any way both countries to reach a peaceful agreement, because there is nothing more best in the world than peace. So I leave the floor to my colleagues, Honourable Pepe Fenikadam, who is the Shadow Foreign Affairs Minister.
So thank you and welcome. Welcome to this committee. Yes, as my colleague just said, we do observe what is presently happening in the Nagorno-Karabakh dispute, which has lingered now for the last 30 years, and unfortunately has left so many casualties on both sides of the fence, from basically two wars which have ended but not resolved the problem. Obviously, we do observe what is happening. We have been listening to the news, which was pessimistic news over the last months, of tensions rising between Armenia and Azerbaijan, specifically on the Nagorno-Karabakh situation. However, this matter has aggravated over the last few months, following the closure of access, I understand, from the Armenian end. So you speak of a breakthrough this morning. I did not exactly understand what the breakthrough is, in terms of whether it's a breakthrough of medicines and the aid coming from the Azeri side, or is it from the Armenian side? Because I understand that's the biggest issue in terms of access to the Nagorno people is that there's a blockade, there's some blockade from the Armenian side to of access to these people. So maybe you could clarify whether this what you describe as a breakthrough of this morning relates solely to access and to medicines and aids from the Azeri side, and what is the situation with regards to access from the Armenian side. Obviously, we as members of the Council of Europe, we as members of the European Union, we support and we believe that the dialogue, that you are two neighbours, whatever happens, these two countries are two neighbours which have to coexist next to each other, and undoubtedly the way forward is to find a negotiated outcome. So that's so far as the Nagorno-Karabakh issue is concerned. Obviously, I welcome you to Malta, and you spoke about relations between the Maltese state and the Maltese government and the government in Azerbaijan. I am sure you are aware that one of the most controversial matters which has been a big issue, a political issue in Malta, is what we refer to as the investment which the present government has made in the what we refer to as the Electrogas power station, which I'm sure you are aware has as part of its shareholders Sokar, which I understand is of Azerbaijani, is owned by Azerbaijani even on a state level, and I am sure you are aware that this project has been the subject of a big controversy, which has ended up in front of our Auditor General, who has published a report and has described this contract, which has in it as one of the shareholders a major company from Azerbaijan, and previously had also the Gazprom company, which has now left this consortium. I am sure you are aware that this contract is mirrored by series of allegations of corruption, of kickbacks, of great concern to the Auditor General, and I am sure to the people of Malta at large. You are aware that a number of ministers have been summoned in front of the Public Accounts Committee on this particular controversial contract, and in particular the ex-minister of responsible for energy, therefore responsible for this project, refused to answer a number of questions, claiming that he has the right not to answer questions, not to incriminate himself. He does not exclude that he is being investigated by the police force. He does not exclude, the police do not exclude that the matter is being investigated by the police. So maybe I can have some comments whether you have any concerns on this participation of the Azeri company in this consortium which operates till today, and is a very, very controversial matter, which was a big issue, which was brought up by the late Daphne Caruana Galizia. You are aware Daphne Caruana Galizia was a journalist who dug very much into this story, dug and sought to expose all the facts about this matter, and unfortunately Daphne Caruana Galizia was assassinated, was murdered, and till today we have not had justice has not been served on this matter. On another point, I will make my intervention all at once. I follow what happens internally as well in Azerbaijan, and I understand that there is a particular concern at the moment within Azerbaijan which is making the existence of political parties a bit more complicated. I understand that the laws in Azerbaijan in terms of registration of political parties has been amended quite recently, I'm not mistaken, at the beginning of this year, which has imposed very stringent conditions for the possibility of existence of a political party, which has and is being at least interpreted by what I understand and follow and read about, by concerns that this law is gagging, is leading to the actual extinction, the actual closure, the actual non-existence of a number of opposition parties. And that is obviously a concern for my party, an opposition, a concern, I would say, for all those who believe in democracy, that whilst political parties need to be regulated, but such regulations should in no manner be to an extent that they actually make it impossible to operate. My third and last point, my fourth point is this week is Pride Week in Malta. Pride. We are celebrating Pride Week in Malta.
European
Pride Week in Malta. And from what I understand, there is even international concern as to the rights and protection of LGBTIQ rights within Azerbaijan, so maybe you could elaborate on this matter, because in terms of world ranking and European ranking of rights of these minority groups, I would say unfortunately Azerbaijan lags a bit behind with a number of other countries. I thank you, I welcome you to this country, and I hope that I will have some replies to my questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I can take other questions as well, because gentleman took quite a lot of time, so I want others to also to participate in this dialogue.
Okay, you can.
Well, thank you very much. Well, first of all, by agreeing to have this session public, I wanted to demonstrate that there is no issues of taboo for us. We are open to any discussion. As in any democratic country, we don't have any issues to shy away from. So that's why I will try to respond to the questions raised. Although my mission to Malta had primarily another focus, and that's why I explained to you that I'm here as the representative of the president on this issue of normalization of Armenia and Azerbaijan. Since you started with that question, I will explain to you. First of all, there is no such a region as Nagorno-Karabakh. I would like you to take that into account. There is a region of Karabakh. Mr. Chairman, I will leave with you the map which reflects the administrative division of Azerbaijan after the Second Karabakh War, and I would appreciate if you could share a copy with gentlemen also. Karabakh region is the one which unites both mountainous part and the lowland part of Karabakh, because Nagorno-Karabakh was an artificial creature of the Soviet time. Anyway, today when I said a breakthrough took place, it was because up until this morning, because of the intransigence of the separatists in Karabakh region of Azerbaijan, the roads that could deliver humanitarian assistance to them were blocked, all of them. Basically, what we said that we as Azerbaijan, as a central authorities, we care about this population. We don't want it to suffer from any hardships related to humanitarian issues. That's why Azerbaijani government 10 days ago proposed to deliver two trucks full of 40 tons of flour to be delivered to this population, because they expressed an opinion that they have shortages of bread. Unfortunately, because of these diehard separatists who are in charge of that part of Azerbaijan today, they blocked the road with concrete barriers on the Agdam Road. They opened a tent of radicals who actually promised not to allow any single vehicle which would come that way, because they don't want to come it from Azerbaijani territory. Gentleman mentioned that, you know, if this breakthrough means that this Russian truck has come from Azerbaijani territory, but let me remind you that both Agdam and Lachin roads are part and parcel of Azerbaijani territory. So not Azeri, Azerbaijani, that's the adjective to be used. Then, of course, when we speak about breakthrough, it means that after this intransigence, Russian Red Cross had its initiative implemented. So basically today, this truck brings in to the population in question all the necessary goods, food, baby food, medications, all the necessary staples for children. And this is only just the beginning. So that's why I said it's a breakthrough. Now, what happens next very much depends on the position of Karabakh Armenians. If they would agree that, like it happened this morning, that ICRC, the International Committee on Red Cross, would be allowed to send their own trucks of humanitarian assistance along the same road of Agdam, and simultaneously with that, another truck of ICRC would pass through Lachin Road, that means that we will have resolved this humanitarian access issue. And I think it's a very reasonable proposal, which was put on the table by major stakeholders, by United States Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken. It was supported by European Union. It was supported by Russian Federation. It is supported by ICRC. Azerbaijan has several times reconfirmed its acceptance of this proposal. The only missing part is this group of hardline politicians or, I don't know, representatives of this Armenian population on the ground, who think that if they would allow something coming from Agdam, that would somehow run against their interests. But since they allowed this to happen by the means of Russian Red Cross this morning, I think that this argument is no longer valid, because the road is open. So there is no reason for them to continuously reject the offer by ICRC or by any other countries. There were other countries and organizations which want and which are still ready to send their humanitarian assistance to the population in question. So Azerbaijan's position remains the same. We want this population to receive as much assistance as they need by using all possible routes. Agdam and Lachin routes are not the only ones. There is also a third route which goes from a place, Fizuli, Shusha. So we are ready to engage with any partners to deliver that. But of course, it's very strange when Armenians of Karabakh, basically their leadership, so-called, when they speak about the necessity to avoid genocide, ethnic cleansing, Holodomor, starvation, at the same time they artificially create difficulties for their population to receive that aid. Now that they basically agreed to receive the assistance by Russian Red Cross, I think that they should continuously open their minds and allow all those stakeholders to deliver, to continuously deliver. That's why all friends of this situation and who speak for peace, they need basically to support these efforts of the whole world. And they should send certain messages to those that they care about there, that it's in their interests not to politicize the humanitarian issue and to stop this bargaining at the cost of the health of their compatriots. So that's why we do believe that the time is crucial. That's why I reiterate it was a breakthrough. But at the same time, one should not forget that if we speak about peace, we should not be distracted from the major obstacles to peace in the region, because Armenia, by signing the ceasefire agreement in November of 2020, has undertaken a series of commitments, especially with regards to the post-conflict resolution. And one of those commitments was that the government of Armenia agreed to withdraw all of the Armenian armed forces from the sovereign territory of Azerbaijan. Mr. Chairman, in 2 months' time, we will mark 3 years since the signature of the ceasefire agreement. Unfortunately, even today as we speak, we still have around 10,000 of armed Armenian forces in the sovereign territory of Azerbaijan, in the territories in Karabakh, which are where the Russian peacekeepers are temporarily deployed. So these people are armed by more than 100 tanks, armored vehicles, artillery pieces. They are continuing to plant landmines, which cost people's lives. We have lost more than 300 civilians in Azerbaijan after the ceasefire because they are continuously planting booby traps and landmines. And that's why they continuously, these people sitting inside our territory, they basically are opening fire at our people, at our border guards. They are violating ceasefire regime. So they are a concrete security risk to Azerbaijan. So if Armenia is serious about its respect to Azerbaijan's territorial integrity, and I would like to remind you that Prime Minister Pashinyan on several occasions reiterated his position that Armenia, he himself, recognized Azerbaijan's territorial integrity, including Karabakh region. So if he is sincere about this statement, then he needs to make sure that his words are compatible with his deeds. So he needs to order his army to withdraw the remaining parts of occupation forces from our territory. He also needs to live up to the commitment that the transportation links between Armenia and Azerbaijan should be open. For that, he needs to implement his promise that Armenia would construct the railroad which is dividing Azerbaijan from Armenia. Here on this map you see we're talking about 44-kilometer long railroad which used to exist in the Soviet Union time, but which was destroyed during the conflict. So if we are able to build this railroad, it will connect not only Armenia to Azerbaijan, it will also connect Asia through Europe, because it is part of the so-called Middle Corridor, to which European Union also pays more and more attention in the context of ongoing instability in the broader region. So on this map, you can see that the middle corridor, which is in the red color, Mr. Chairman, is the shortest and the most efficient way to connect Asia to Europe. And we are now working with all the stakeholders. But Armenia is undermining its commitment. So in order for peace to have a serious chance for success, Mr. Chairman, we need Armenia to implement all the commitments that they have promised, including, first and foremost, withdrawal of their armed forces from our territory. We cannot wait indefinitely until they fulfill this commitment, because by killing our people, by undermining security, and by staying as a security risk to us, they have become a legitimate military target for our armed forces. Azerbaijan does not want to resolve this issue militarily, because we have declared our preference for political solution through diplomatic negotiations. But, you know, we have demonstrated our strategic patience for almost 3 years, and we call for the international community to exert necessary pressure on the government of Armenia to respect its commitments, its obligations, and to make the long-standing peace prospect feasible. Now, with regard to two other issues, I mean, again, I have nothing to comment on your internal controversies with regard to the issues related to the gas and the electric stations. What I know is that SOCAR has been very heavily involved in ensuring your energy security. I know that because of the implementation of this project of cooperation, the prices for energy in Malta have dropped significantly, which is appreciated by ordinary people. I regret any tragic events which happened, but again, I have no comment to make on this. I think the key word in what you said with regard to that was allegations. So until this something is proved, it remains just allegation, and I regret that. With regard to the law on political parties, I appreciate your keen interest in observing the development of democracy in the country of Azerbaijan. We hope that this interest is a positive one and, you know, is based on your genuine desire to be constructive. But I think that the law on the political parties that you referred to, it has undergone the internal discussions between different political forces in the country. We believe that it's an improvement with the previous law, and we would actually ask all of our friends to respect the sovereign right of any parliament to adopt the decisions and the laws which have to govern our internal life. Democracy is something which is always a process. There is not a single country in the world which can boast perfect democracy, including, I hope, in this part of the world. So that's why we all are very much moving along this road. And, of course, our participation in the Council of Europe and the fact that quite almost all the laws are going through the expertise of the Venice Commission and the experts of international law, the openness of Azerbaijan to this process demonstrates our commitment to all the values that we have subscribed to by joining the Council of Europe in 2001. With regard to European Pride Week, well, I have only to congratulate you with this important event. Actually, I don't think that your comments saying that we lag behind you in this regard, I don't want to comment them. I leave it at your conscious, but I think we don't lag behind anyone. We are following our own way, and I think that every citizen in Azerbaijan enjoys the same rights. But going back, since these are not the issues which I wanted to take your time from, I just wanted to finalize my comments by saying that we very much look forward to a day when the European Union will not only facilitate peace process, but also can contribute to confidence building between Armenians and Azerbaijanis. And here I am referring to so-called Track 2 diplomacy, where besides others, parliamentarians also have a role to play. Because as you may imagine, the tragic consequences of this conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan, it has laid very deep traces in the among the population. So I think Armenia and Azerbaijan, besides investing themselves into finalizing the peace agreement, they also have to undertake certain efforts in order to prepare their populations for peace. And I think in this particular regard, parliamentary diplomacy could be of importance. We know that the European Union is considering a series of measures which they are ready to finance, including meetings, organizing meetings between different representatives of different walks of life of Armenia and Azerbaijan, including journalists, politologists, young people, why not parliamentarians? So at some point, I think our parliamentarians should be able to talk to each other not only within the framework of international organizations like OSCE Parliamentary Assembly or Council of Europe Parliamentary Assembly, but also bilaterally. So I hope that the progress in the peace track would allow us to engage into this. And last but not least, I think that since we are all talking about saving human lives, it is very important that I inform you about the biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges that Azerbaijan faces after the war, and that is the demining issue. As a result of the fact that Armenia has planted 1.5 million of landmines in our territories during 28 years of occupation, we have lost thousands of people because of that. And after the ceasefire was signed, the number of victims of mines is exceeding 300. This is partly because Armenia has refused to provide Azerbaijan with accurate mine maps. They don't want to share the information where they planted them. Moreover, after the ceasefire, we have evidence which we transferred to interested stakeholders that they continued to plant landmines, including by illegally transferring them through the Lachin Road. That is one of the reasons why Lachin Road, we installed our border checkpoint, because we wanted to put an end to illegal transfer of weapons, landmines, and also military personnel from Armenia who passed to Karabakh region through Lachin Road to carry out a rotation of their military contingent. So we, our appeal to European Union, and Malta is part of the European Union, is to step up assistance to Azerbaijan in order to help us decontaminate these territories from anti-personnel landmines and UXOs, unexploded ordnance. Unfortunately, our own national capacity to tackle this challenge is not sufficient. We have hired independent consultants who made a study, and they have concluded that if Azerbaijan will continue to demine the territory only with its own forces, it will take us another 30 years and $25 billion of investment in order to clean up these territories. So our request is when you will have discussions within the parliamentary structures of EU, if you could also mention this issue as coming in the form of request from Azerbaijan, because helping us to quickly demine these territories, you will contribute to restoration of fundamental human rights of hundreds of thousands of internally displaced persons who were ethnically cleansed and evicted from their homes. And we cannot bring them back today, because even if their territories are no longer under occupation, they are contaminated by bombs and landmines, and they cannot just be left to go there in safety. So I know that EU is one of the largest donors on humanitarian demining, so if you could just put in a word for us, because you will be saving human lives, and you will also bring closer to us the day when thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people will reach their dream to get back to the homes where they were born. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency. I think we can end the meeting here. May I reiterate only the support from our side to any peace agreement which may be reached through a political solution and through democracy. Thank you very much, and wish you all the best.
Thank you very much for making this meeting possible, and I thank you for your questions.